Chapter 38. Fatuity and of the grossness of his arts. Well, the event proved that they were all unneeded. But why had he gone out at such an hour? She was irritated to find herself still preoccupied by his comings and goings. Turning from the window, she sat down again. She wondered what she meant to do next. No, she would not show him the letters. She would simply leave them on his table and go away. She would leave the house with her boy and Andorra. It was a relief to feel a definite plan forming itself in her mind, something that her uprooted thoughts could fasten on. She would go away, of course. And meanwhile, in order not to see him, she would feign a headache and remain in her room till after luncheon. Then she and Andorra would pack a few things and fly with the child while he was dawdling about upstairs in the studio. When one's house fell, one fled from the ruins. Nothing could be simpler, more inevitable. Her thoughts were checked by the impossibility of picturing what would happen next. Try as she would, she could not see herself and the child away from Deering. But that, of course, was because of her nervous weakness. She had youth, money, energy. All the trumps were on her side. It was much more difficult to imagine what would become of Deering. He was so dependent on her, and they had been so happy together. The fact struck her as illogical, and even immoral, and yet she knew he had been happy with her. It never happened like that in novels. Happiness built on a lie always crumbled, and buried the presumptuous architect beneath the ruins. According to the laws of every novel she had ever read, Deering, having deceived her once, would inevitably have gone on deceiving her. Yet she knew he had not gone on deceiving her. She tried again to picture her new life. Her friends, of course, would rally about her. But the prospect left her cold. She did not want them to rally. She wanted only one thing: the life she had been living before she had given her baby the embroidered bag to play with. Oh, why had she given him the bag? She had been so happy, they had all been so happy. Every nerve in her clamored for her lost happiness, angrily, unreasonably, as the boy had clamored for his bag. It was horrible to know too much. There was always blood in the foundations. Parents kept things from children, protected them from all the dark secrets of pain and evil. And was any life livable unless it were thus protected? Could anyone look in the Medusa's face and live? But why should she leave the house, since it was hers? Here, with her boy and Andorra, she could still make for herself the semblance of a life. It was Deering who would have to go. He would understand that, as soon as he saw the letters. She pictured him in the act of going, leaving the house as he had left it just now. She saw the gate closing on him for the last time. Now her vision was acute enough. She saw him as distinctly as if he were in the room. Ah, he would not like returning to the old life of privations and expedience. And yet she knew he would not plead with her. Suddenly a new thought rushed through her mind. What if Andorra had rushed to him with the tale of the discovery of the letters with the lie, "You are discovered"? Of romantic fiction? What if he had left her for good? It would not be Unlikahem after all. Under his wonderful gentleness he was always evasive and inscrutable. He might have said to himself that he would forestall her action and place himself at once on the defensive. It might be that she had seen him go out of the gate for the last time. She looked about the room again, as if this thought had given it a new aspect. Yes, this alone could explain her husband's going out. It was past 12 o'clock, their usual luncheon hour, and he was scrupulously punctual at meals, and gently reproachful if she kept him waiting. Only some unwonted event could have caused him to leave the house at such an hour, and with such marks of haste. Well, perhaps it was better that Andorra should have spoken. She mistrusted her own courage. She almost hoped the deed had been done for her. Yet her next sensation was one of confused resentment. She said to herself, why has Andorra interfered? She felt baffled and angry, as though her prey had escaped her. If Deering had been in the house, she would have gone to him instantly and overwhelmed him with her scorn. But he had gone out, and she did not know where he had gone, and oddly mingled with her anger against him was the latent instinct of vigilance, the solicitude of the woman accustomed to watch over the man she loves. It would be strange never to feel that solicitude again, never to hear him say, with his hand on her hair, "Why, you foolish child, were you worried? Am I late?" The sense of his touch was so real that she stiffened herself against it, flinging back her head, as if to throw off his hand. The mere thought of his caress was hateful, yet she felt it in all her traitorous veins. Yes, she felt it, but with horror and repugnance. It was something she wanted to escape from, and the fact of struggling against it was what made its hold so strong. It was as though her mind were sounding her body, to make sure of its allegiance, spying on it for any secret movement of revolt. To escape from the sensation, she rose and went again to the window. No one was in sight. But presently the gate began to swing back, and her heart gave a leap she knew not whether up or down. A moment later the gate opened slowly to admit a perambulator, propelled by the nurse and flanked by Juliet and Andorra. Lizzie's eyes rested on the familiar group, as if she had never seen it before, and she stood motionless, instead of flying down to meet the children. Suddenly there was a step on the stairs, and she heard Andorra's agitated knock. She unbolted the door, and was strained to her friend's emaciated bosom. "My darling," Miss Macy cried. "Remember you have your child and me." Lizzie loosened herself gently. She looked at Andorra with a feeling of estrangement which she could not explain. "Have you spoken to my husband?" she asked, drawing coldly back. "Spoken to him?" "No." Andorra stared at her in genuine wonder. "Then you haven't met him since he left me?" "No, my love." "Is he out?" "I haven't met him." Lizzie sat down with a confused sense of relief, which welled up to her throat and made speech difficult. Suddenly light came to Andorra. I understand, dearest. You didn't feel able to see him yourself. You want me to go to him for you." She looked about her, scenting the battle. "Why, you're right, darling. As soon as he comes in I'll go to him. The sooner we get it over the better." She followed Lizzie, who without answering her had turned mechanically back to the window. As they stood there, the gate moved again, and Deering entered the garden. "There he is now." Lizzie felt Andorra's fervent clutch upon her arm. "Where are the letters? I will go down at once. You allow me to speak for you? You trust my woman's heart?" "Oh, believe me, darling," Miss Macy panted, "I shall know just what to say to him." "What to say to him?" Lizzie absently repeated. As her husband advanced up the path, he had a sudden trembling vision of their 3 years together. Those years were her whole life. Everything before them had been colorless and unconscious, like the blind life of the plant before it reaches the surface of soil. They had not been exactly what she dreamed, but if they had taken away certain illusions, they had left richer realities in their stead. She understood now that she had gradually adjusted herself to the new image of her husband as he would always be. He was not the hero of her dream, but he was the man she loved, and who had loved her. For she saw now, in this last white flash of pity and initiation, that, as a solid marble may be made out of worthless scraps of mortar, glass and pebbles, so out of mean mixed substances may be fashioned a love that will bear the stress of life. More urgently, she felt the pressure of Miss Macy's hand. "I shall hand him the letters without a word. You may rely, love, on my sense of dignity. I know everything you're feeling at this moment." Deering had reached the doorstep. Lizzie continued to watch him in silence till he disappeared under the glazed roof of the porch below the window. Then she turned and looked almost compassionately at her friend. "Oh, poor Andorra, you don't know anything, you don't know anything at all," she said. The end. End of Project Gutenberg's Tales of Men and Ghosts, by Edith Wharton. TLMGH by Gutenberg Edition.